Welcome to .NET Rambles, a weekly podcast where Andy and Rowan discuss all things .NET related. Hey, Rowan, how are you doing?
Good. How are you doing, Andy? Great, Friday afternoon.
Friday, yeah, we're doing this again on a Friday recording. Lovely. Brilliant weather.
Yeah, it's towards the end of June, and finally the weather's warmed up in the UK, hasn't it? It's taken a while.
Yeah, it's been nice. A beautiful week this week. It's been really nice, really hot. So, shorts weather, and need to get out there, and it's nearly beer o'clock. So.
It is, isn't it, on a Friday afternoon. Absolutely.
Great stuff. So today, what are we talking about?
Oh, we're talking about good things that come in sevens.
Indeed, the magnificent seven.
Yeah absolutely. Absolutely. But before we get to that, I've got an interesting random fact for you.
Excellent. I'd like to hear this.
And it's around the mathematical symbol for division. Can you picture that in your mind?
The mathematical, a little dividing sign. Yep, I've got that.
Yeah. So dot, line, dot.
Yep.
Any idea what that's called?
It's called the division symbol, obviously. What else would it be called?
AKA obelus, also known as obelus. And there's even a plural for obelus, obeluses or obeli.
Obeli, like octopi, like
it. Yeah, it comes from a term in typography that refers to a historical mark, which is basically resolved to mean three things today. So the first is the division sign. Mm-hmm. Second is a little dagger, which is like that little footnote thing that you see in documentation. So if you've got some text and a little footnote symbol, it looks like a dagger.
Okay, yeah, right.
That comes from an obelus. And there's also a third meaning around a commercial minus sign, which is more of a slanted line with the dots above it. But apparently the dagger symbol or this obelus symbol originated from a variant of the obelus, which was originally depicted by a plain line or a line with two dots, which is how we've come to know the divide by symbol.
Yeah.
And it actually represented an iron roasting spit.
Ouch.
Or a dart or the sharp end of a javelin, which symbolized the skewering or cutting out of dubious matter. So,
cutting out. That sounds interesting.
That leads towards what the divide operating maths is all about. So there you go, a bit of a history on the divide by sign in maths.
Like that, very interesting. I like that fact. Very good, very good.
Beautiful.
Cool. So onto all things .NET 7. So
yeah, absolutely.
I think it's basically we've been getting some emails and sort of keeping an eye on things recently, and their .NET 7 preview 4 was released about a week ago. About a month ago, 10th of May. Looking at the wrong month. But yeah, so it's come out and obviously people have been using it. There's been some blog posts about it. There's been some YouTube videos, watching a few of them to see what good stuff's coming out. And we just wanted to sort of like highlight a few bits that were in there. There's no way we can cover all of them because it's absolutely loads. It's quite amazing what they're bringing in. But so we thought we'd go through a few of them, discuss a couple of them, some of the things we like the look of, some things that might be useful to us coming up soon. In some projects we're working on.
That's really exciting. So when we talk about .NET 7, what areas are we talking about? Because .NET is obviously a base class library, but we've got things like ASP.NET Core. We've got things like C# 11, which is thrown into the mix. What are we talking about today?
Yes, it's basically talking about all of that, really. We've got a couple of things about C# 11. We've got quite a few things about ASP.NET Core and some of the core APIs. So the actual .NET 7 based library. So yeah, we've got a few of these things to talk about. So sounds like they're releasing because they've sort of brought all of these in together now and everything gets released at the same time.
Sorry to interrupt. I was just going to say, let's start off with the ASP.NET Core updates because
that's a great idea. I was going to suggest
about that. Great minds think alike, don't they? let's get into it because I know there are a huge number of ASP.NET Core updates and a lot of them are quite exciting. So what's the first one in the list?
Yeah, so the first one, we've got some HTTP2 performance improvements.
Nice.
So basically, they're bringing in a re-architecture of how Kestrel, so Kestrel is the built-in web server that we've got. And basically, the way that processes HTTP2 requests at the moment, they found that can be quite limiting because you're blocking. And obviously, blocking, as we know, that's why async was introduced and all these things. It wastes,
chew up resources.
Yeah, wastes resource. So you can be using that resource for other things. So apparently HTTP2 now allows 100 requests to run on a TCP connection in parallel, multiplexing. And it's a powerful feature, but it's a complex way of implementing it. So before they did this, before preview 4, what they were doing is they were using the lock keyword, which we've used quite a bit in .NET. It's been there a long time.
And
it's
basically synchronize all the requests.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we've used lock in the past to block access to things. So yeah, you can control what gets what, and that's basically what they're doing with it. So, you know, lock's a very simple solution to write safe multi-threading code, but it's really inefficient under the hood.
Absolutely, because we're sort of funneling all the requests down to sort of one through that lock at a time, aren't we?
Yeah,
so
that's right. Yeah.
So are you saying they can now do 100 requests in parallel using HTTP/2?
It certainly looks like it. Yeah, basically what they did is they benchmarked it and they found that high thread contention occurred when the connection's busy.
Yeah,
obviously CPU cycles are being wasted, idle CPU cores. As requests are waiting for the write lock to be available. And then basically, the benchmarks were lower than any other servers in busy connection scenarios. So basically what they've done is they've completely rewritten it. So they've thrown that away. And now in Kestrel with TCP connections, they use a thread safe queue to get rid of the write lock completely.
Yep.
So now instead of fighting over who gets to use the write lock, they're basically queuing up all the requests in an order, because obviously that's how queue works. It's very British. It came from a British implementation originally. We told them how queuing worked.
Brilliant.
And there's a dedicated consumer process that basically then processes them all. So now previously wasted CPU resources are available to the rest of the app, so they can be put back into
Right. So we haven't got 100 requests sitting there waiting for a lock to complete. They've all been queued, and those resources are then given back to the server.
Absolutely. So there's a graph. I mean, we'll put links to all of this in the show notes, which we'll have to say they're all up there now. So if people want to go and have a look at show notes, they're all available on the website.
And what is that website URL address? Just in case we've forgotten.
Absolutely, it is podcast.dotnetrambles.com.
Brilliant. Rolls off the tongue. Excellent.
So we're quite proud of that. It's up there now. We've got it working. We'll have some links on there. And they've got a really nice graph on the website for this showing that, I mean, .NET 6, it's phenomenal when you look at the .NET 6 version. What's that, under a million? Well under. It's under 500,000 gRPC performance messages per second.
Yeah.
Whereas .NET is now up to, what's that, 6.5 million? Is that?
6.5 million, which incidentally is about twice as fast as Golang.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you might want to tap that in there.
To the graph. Yeah.
That's a useful fact. So obviously it's much, much quicker. So, yeah, that's pretty impressive that they've done that. So, yeah, nice improvement there. If you're using gRPC, you're going to find a huge increase there straight away. So, that's a nice one.
Nice. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Excellent. That's interesting with HTTP/2, becoming more and more widely used. And HTTP/3 actually now thrown in the mix, which incidentally .NET 7 now had support for. But we'll get onto that later.
Absolutely. So what's next? What have you got next for us?
Cool. Well, so there's been some updates around the minimal APIs. So in .NET 6 or ASP.NET Core 6, minimal APIs were introduced, which was a nice little feature around being able to define APIs without having to define controllers. So we've got this concept of minimal APIs. But in that implementation, in the .NET 6 implementation, the return types, if you wanted to return an explicit return type, all you could return is an I result. So they introduced a new interface called an I result that you got to through a static class called results. So you went results.ok or results.json. But those concrete implementations of the I result interface weren't exposed at all. And what they've done in .NET 7, ASP.NET Core 7, is expose those concrete types of the I result interface, which means you can now test for those explicit concrete implementations. So in ASP.NET Core 6, it was very difficult to test to see if you had a not found result, for example, as opposed to an OK result, because those concrete implementations of I result weren't made public, but now they've been made public.
Great.
So that makes testing your minimal APIs a lot easier, and you can look at the specific types that your minimal API methods are returning, which is good.
That's great. Yeah. Okay. Useful to know. And the minimal APIs are really nice, actually. Yeah, we started working with them a little bit more. So yeah, trying to get to understand those a bit. They're very good.
They're very nice, aren't they? And there's been some open API improvements around those mineral APIs there.
Yeah, as far as I understand. Right. Yeah. So I think all this is sort of coming together now, isn't it? They're obviously putting a lot of work into this. So yeah, they're now supporting. So they support the open API specification, which is basically a language agnostic standard for describing or, you know, putting together documentation about RESTful APIs.
Yeah.
So, you know, we use things called Swagger and stuff like that. So basically it allows Swagger to basically get all the information from your API and show it. So yeah, in .NET 7 Preview 4, they're introducing support for the ASP.NET Core.Open API package, which provides APIs for interacting with the Open API spec for mineral APIs. So that's they're automatically included in the mineral API application. So now you can get those available straight away, and you can use those. And basically, you can just tag on when you define your minimal API endpoint. So things like app.mapget, which hopefully people understand. If not, obviously there's more of this in the documentation, but something you can add to that now is you add dot with open API.
Yeah.
And it, then just that extension method generates the open API operations for that get operation.
Marvelous. Yeah.
Obviously then you can see them. There's various extensions in there with overloads that you can use to give you various information. So you could use one that lets you explain what, it gives you a summary option.
Yep.
So you can set the parameters. You can do all sorts of things with it. So yeah, it's getting a lot more, I suppose, feature parity with the way we did this with previous web API.
So
that's which a lot of this.
Which there was the ability to do a lot of that through attributes, wasn't there, on controller actions and controllers. Yeah. So now we've got a sort of a fluent API looking thing.
Which is quite tidy, actually. Yeah, it does look really nice. I think it'd be a nice way of implementing it.
So you've got the option of providing specifics if the reflection, the version that uses reflection, like, you know, the with open API that, you know, that reflects on the method that you you know, or the lambda or the delegate that you pass into map get, for example, it would work out what the return type is and what the input parameters are.
Yeah.
But if you need to provide a bit more specific information around that, you've got the ability to define things, like you said, like the summary or like the specific parameters.
Yeah.
If the reflection doesn't do a good enough job. Yeah. That's quite cool.
Yeah, nice. Absolutely. So, and I think there's something a bit more about minimal APIs you want to tell us as well?
There is. Yeah. We've now got the option of defining multiple return types from a minimal API method. So if your API, because we're talking about web APIs that typically return one of maybe a few accepted HTTP return codes, like, you know, a HTTP 200 for OK or a 404 for not found, you can explicitly define that in the return type of your minimal APIs using a new generic type that takes multiple generic parameters, which is quite cool. So we've now got a results type that has one or more generic parameters where you can define, you know, either your typed results.ok or typed results.not found. So you can explicitly specify the return types of your minimal API method, and then open API can then expose that. And, you know, things like Swagger can then expose that, so you can see what are the expected types from your return types from your method. So that's quite cool.
Nice.
And it basically translates, you know, the expected return types into type safety, which is quite cool.
Yeah, makes sense, because you're going to be returning more than one result. So great. Okay, which leads me on to root groups, which is another thing they've introduced. So we've got a map group extension method now, which basically helps us organize endpoints with a common prefix. So, you know, again, this used to be done attribute based, so you could put a common endpoint at the top of your controller
on your controller, couldn't you? You could put a root attribute on, which would sort of group them all under the same root.
And obviously they now want a way of doing that with a minimal API. So what you can now do is you can use map group and then give it a string which tells it what the path is. So
it's part of the path.
Public to do's, or, you know, weather forecast or whatever. And then you can then add your endpoints to that, and they'll all get mapped using that common prefix.
Brilliant.
So it's a way of shortcutting that. You can also then add authorization to all of those at the same time as well. So it's a way of putting grouping everything together, adding authorization. I guess they'll also add other bits to it that you can add metadata that is common to them all and things like that. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a nice way of grouping it all and saving you a little bit of configuration.
Brilliant. Yeah, and duplication, I think. Yeah.
That's
really good. And like we were saying just before we press record, it feels like this is the first of probably a few updates to minimal APIs, isn't it?
I think it's got to be.
Like, yeah. It feels like subsequent versions of ASP.NET Core are gonna sort of build on this, aren't they? So that moves us on to some updates around SignalR. SignalR has been around for a long time, and it's fairly well matured. It's a brilliant piece of technology, really, tech, whereby the server and the client, so JavaScript running in a client, not that you necessarily need to be aware of the JavaScript, but a server can communicate directly with browsers. And previously, in previous versions, SignalR was able to call methods from the server onto the client. So the server could call the client, but it was unable to get results from the client. But in ASP.NET Core 7, the server is now able to call a method on the client and await that result and get that result and do stuff with it, which is pretty cool. So they've introduced a new method called invoke async, which is available on various parts of the SignalR infrastructure. But you can basically get a hold of a client, invoke async, invoke a function on the client, and then get that result back, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, nice. Like it. Okay. So the next thing I've got on my list is gRPC JSON transcoding, which is quite a mouthful, but as far as I can tell, it basically relates to the fact that obviously gRPC is great. It's a fast way of services talking to each other. It's obviously a very fast way. That's why more places are trying to use it.
Binary serialization, essentially, isn't it? Yeah,
exactly. That's it. Yeah. So it's not as chatty. But of course, if you do that, what you're doing is you're limiting yourself because some systems don't support gRPC. So you've got to then provide a fallback, which is normally going to be REST, have a REST API that matches.
Right. Yeah.
And of course, if you're trying to keep two of them in sync, it's double code. It's a chance to introduce issues if you update one without the other, this sort of thing. So they brought in this JSON transcoding, which allows gRPC services to be called via RESTful APIs.
Brilliant. Because gRPC relies on HTTP2, doesn't it?
It does. That's right.
And so not all browsers support HTTP2, therefore not all browsers were capable of even communicating using gRPC. Great. So we've now got a nice way to define both a gRPC and a JSON API all in one hit. Awesome.
Yeah, and it's really nicely done. Yeah, it's all in one place so you can see it all. And it looks like it's just going to work. So, really nice.
Very cool. And that coupled with the HTTP2 performance improvements, makes for a nice story, doesn't it?
Should do. Absolutely. Yeah.
Brilliant. Excellent. Well, we're ripping through these.
We are.
But there's a lot to get through, isn't there?
There is so much in there, yeah.
The next one we've got down is the ability to go back to the program.main method. So .NET 6 introduced this idea of top-level statements in your console apps where you didn't have to define a public static void main method. We've been used to doing that from day dot of C# and .NET.
Yeah.
And that even came from the Java world, didn't it, with a public static void main.
It did. I think it's always been a really common thing. It's one of those things you just get used to. It. It's there. It's just something you're used to. It's white noise, really. You just ignore it, and it's just something you get used to. But, they sort of introduced this newer way of doing it, didn't they, which some people didn't like. So
absolutely,
we'll see what happened.
And I guess if you're new to the whole story and you pick up .NET 6 with top level statements in it, you may not even be aware of the history of the public static void main, and that may throw you off and give you a different sense of what classes and methods and that sort of thing are about. But anyway, to cut a long story short, you've now got the ability to go back to that program.main method structure if you want to. So using the .NET command line, you can pass in a parameter which says use program main, and there's also a setting in the or a checkbox in the new program. Sorry, the new project sort of wizard in Visual Studio that allows you to not use top-level statements. It basically says do not use top-level statements, and it'll include a program.main method instead.
Okay. Yeah. So that's quite a nice, easy way of doing it. Yeah, if you like to go back to that way of doing it. Yeah, Great.
Yeah, absolutely. What else we got?
Okay, so yeah, next one is rate limiting middleware, which is quite nice because I've done this in the past, like a lot of developers, probably yourself included,
built
rate limiting functionality into the pipeline, just to protect the APIs and stuff. So yeah, I remember I built it in the past and it was very, very naive. It you know, it was a bit of a sledgehammer to solve the problem, but it, you know, did the job at the end of the day. But they've now introduced that as a NuGet package or some middleware.
That nice.
you can bring in, basically. Yeah, so you can now just do, you know, as you build your app up, you can use the rate limiter and then pass it some rate limiter options. At the moment, obviously, again, I think they're working on things. They've got some bits in there. At the moment, there's one called a rate limit partitioner, which gives you a concurrency limiter, and you can create multiple ones of these for various things, so you can apply them to different endpoints and stuff like that, and you can specify, you know, how many you're limited to. So you can say, you know, one request every 5 seconds or 10 requests every minute or however you want to define it.
Brilliant.
So I think, you know, this is going to be really, really useful to people. So I think, you know, they'll probably build on this and make it so that it's very configurable and you can base it on client IPs or headers or stuff like that. So yeah, it'd be
There's quite a lot to it, isn't there, rate limiting? There's lots of different ways that you can slice and dice it. And so as a result, they've added lots of configurable options, haven't they, which is great. And it's built into the actual framework rather than it being a NuGet package that's developed by someone else.
I was thinking about the one we were actually looking at this a couple of days ago. We were actually looking at rate limiting in another system, and that was actually a NuGet package. So, you know, we saw how they'd done that. You're right. This one's built into the actual framework now. So, yeah, very easy to drop in and use and configure it. So, yeah.
Yeah, nice. Marvellous. Excellent. So that about wraps up the sort of the headline items in ASP.NET Core 7. Mm. As we said at the beginning, .NET 7 is not just about ASP.NET, but there's also improvements to C# by way of C# 11. You know, there's a whole new version of C# 11 coming out with this set of releases, isn't it? Yeah. And there's a load of stuff, lots of small stuff in C# 11, really, isn't there?
There is,
things like extension of the name of functionality. So, you know, that name of keyword that'll allow you to basically return a string from a, you know, from a parameter or a type. Mm-hmm. The functionality of that name of keyword has been extended in C# 11, basically to include type parameters and parameter names of things that are used in attributes. So so you can now get, you know, more name ofs in C# 11. So the scope of that has been broadened. What else have we got in C# 11? Things like raw string literals. What's that all about?
Raw string literals. People have probably come across this because I've heard this being talked about quite a lot. But yeah, basically raw string literals can contain any arbitrary text, so white space, new lines, embedded quotes, and other special characters without you having to escape them. So, you know, normally when you put in a funky string that you want as a string, you have to escape out anything weird in it. So a common thing is, like, you know, paths. Paths are always a funny one that I get stuck with.
With the backslashes.
Whereas now if you put three double quotes, you can then basically, so it starts with three double quotes and ends with three double quotes, and then within it, you can put pretty much anything. So you can you know, put different lines of text, you can put quotes within it, all sorts of things. And
carriage returns.
New lines.
Absolutely,
all of that.
Multiple lines,
It's quite nice, easy way to lay things out. So it allows you to lay it out on a, you know, multiple lines, which obviously could be quite useful for things like JSON stuff.
And building on that, you can also include string interpolation in that. In that you can, you know, precede your triple quotes with a dollar sign, which means you can then add your string interpolation in there. And if your string interpolation, or if you need to include the, you know, the curly braces within your your string literal, you can actually use multiple dollar signs to indicate how many curly braces you want to use in your string interpolation. So, you know, they've thought through all of that, obviously.
It's starting to look quite funky, these strings, because, the example we're looking at the moment is dollar, dollar, quote, 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 which is interesting. But, obviously they're giving you a lot more flexibility now. So if you can use it if you want. If you don't, it's, you know, it's there to be used. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And then taking that one step further, previously in your string interpolation, it wasn't possible to have multiple lines within your interpolated, you know, code that runs within the string building. But now you can. So the text inside the curly braces for string interpolation can now span multiple lines. And so, yeah, obviously the text between those curly braces is parsed by C sharp, and you can now add multiple lines in there where previously you couldn't.
Yeah, nice. So, yeah, making it a lot better.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. There's also some updates around pattern matching in C sharp. You know, as the C sharp versions have gone on, pattern matching has slowly improved.
It is.
And the latest iteration, C sharp 11, introduces list patterns, which sort of extends the pattern matching to match sequences of elements in a list or an array. And so you can match sort of constants in an array. So if you had an array with three numbers in it, 1, 2, 3, you can match that as a constant. Yeah. And you can also sort of deconstruct to variables or even use the discard pattern with, you know, with underscores within that array. Mm-hmm. So it's becoming more and more powerful and flexible, the, you know, the pattern matching capabilities of C-sharp.
They do just seem to keep extending that, don't they? So
yeah, which incidentally, I'm going to say it, and I know I'm going to annoy you, but yeah, a lot of that's come from F-sharp.
Of course it has.
That's been in sort of pattern matching in F-sharp.
It's powerful. It's a really powerful feature. So it's no wonder. Yeah. No wonder they're bringing it across.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. It's good to see it translating over into C sharp.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that brings us to the end of the C sharp 11 stuff. I mean, there's loads more in there, but there's small ones and other ones we've not really touched on. But what we'll do is in the show notes we'll add links to all of these pages we've got this from the Microsoft Dev blog site and the docs, so that people can go and read about the other stuff. But
absolutely,
that takes us on to the actual sort of .NET 7 stuff. So this is actually the core library BCL stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. Yeah, and there's lots of small stuff across the board. We've got a few minutes left, so you know, let's just cover off a few of them. There's, as always, there's performance improvements. There's, you know, particularly around the startup of the, you know, of the .NET APIs.
Nice.
We mentioned before that there's HTTP/3 support added to .NET 7, which is interesting because a lot of the browsers are starting to support HTTP/3. Mm-hmm. So that's good to see support in .NET 7 for that. There's loads of other bits and pieces, things like nullability annotations have been added across the board to all the Microsoft.extensions libs, which doesn't make a hell of a lot of difference to us as end users of the of the APIs, but it just means that they've gone through and they've added the nullability extensions, which teases out any bugs, any obscure bugs that might have been in those libraries. It also gives the nullability extensions or that nullability functionality a bit of a good sort of run through all of those extension libraries. So a lot of that stuff sort of happens in the background and you're not necessarily aware of it day-to-day developing on it, but it's good to know that it's gone in.
Well, they're keeping it all up to date, aren't they? Yep. And like you say, if it's going to find some bugs, then that's good for us.
Absolutely. Adding more resilience to those, you know, libraries and, you know, validates the nullability feature and, you know, finds other null-related bugs in the runtime. So, yeah, that sort of stuff happens in the background. We've got a note down there that support for TARs, as in the compression format TAR, has now been implemented, which is pretty cool.
Tar balls, is that right? Yeah. They're called tar balls, which was quite interesting. Obviously, the Microsoft world, we're always used to zip files, but in the probably the Mac and Linux world, tars.
Yeah, tars are the way of compressing, aren't they? Now that .NET 7 is sort of everywhere on all the different operating systems, it absolutely makes sense, doesn't it?
Of course it does.
It's about time, really. Yeah.
So, finishing up, we've got a couple more to go through. So just very quickly, we've got these new microseconds and nanoseconds.
Oh, timestamps, date times. I've been missing those.
Well, yeah, I mean, we need these sort of things, don't we, to record the, you know, the time it takes us to do things because, you know,
we're so
seconds,
quick.
Seconds was too much. So we do need it at this lower level. So, so it used to be tick was the lowest increment of time.
Yeah.
But, they've now introduced these nanoseconds, microseconds. So a tick is 100 nanoseconds. So I'm sure that's going to be useful to quite a few people. But it's fair enough. And then some improvements to the regular expressions library.
Yeah, exactly.
Particularly
around support for spans, which is sort of low level, high performance stuff. That's gone in, and that's exciting. That's good to see that in there.
Yeah, so a few things you can go and look at there. So that's interesting. So that sort of brings us to the end of what we were going to talk about and go through. So it's a bit of a whistle stop through it all, but just wanted to chat about a few of those and sort of give people an idea of what's coming. And it's useful to go and have a look at these things and see, you know, what they're building, what's going to be coming, and you know, what things could be useful to people. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's exciting to see yet another version of ASP.NET Core, mm-hmm. of C Sharp, of the base libraries come out. Yeah. It just goes to show that .NET's going from strength to strength, it's a great platform to be on. So yeah really exciting. Yeah,
absolutely. So I think that's probably all we've got in the main part. That just brings us on to our utility of the week.
What do you got for us?
Well, yeah, interesting this week. So this was something I started using years and years ago. A colleague showed me. We just basically looking for, I think we were searching for some files, and a utility he'd used in the past, a thing called Agent Ransack.
Marvellous.
And basically it's just a free utility that allows you to search your whole, I know there's hundreds of these, there's all sorts, but this one, I've used it for years now, it's just sort of go-to thing. So it just allows you to search for any file on your PC or network drives, and it's really, really fast, and it can search in files, it can search file names, all of it. So
it's pretty powerful, isn't it?
Yeah,
it allows things like Boolean expressions and regexes, and
that's right.
Really fast searching.
So,
yeah,
and it's free for personal and commercial use. So you've got a light version that you can use.
Good.
You can pay for it if you really want it, but yeah, the light version has always been good for me. That's all I've ever used.
Good stuff. I was going to ask about that. Yeah, because it did, on the face of it, does look like a commercial product, but they do have a free offering, which is really good.
That's it. And it's been going for 20 years, so it's been iterated, and lots and nice features in it. So yeah, recommend
nice
that one.
Nice and mature. Brilliant.
Look at. So
good stuff.
Look at that. And we're on about time today.
Yeah, look at that. We're at about half an hour. So that I think covers off everything we wanted to talk about. So thank you once again. It's been an absolute pleasure. I'm looking forward to getting into C# 11 and starting to update my minimal APIs to make use of some of these cool new features.
Yeah. Going to use some gRPC, get some speedy 6.5 million messages per second out there.
Sounds good. Good stuff. All right. Well, till next time. It's been a pleasure.
Yep. Thanks for that. Appreciate your time. Good talking again. Speak to you soon.
See you. Bye.
Cheers, Aaron. Bye.